start with something from the first Sedra. And, Rashi, famous Rashi, in the beginning of the Sedra. Vaydaber Hashem Moshe Bahar Sinai Lemor. Ma inin Shemitah Etzel Har Sinai. Well, you have to tell us over here that the laws of Shemitah were set at Har Sinai. Ela ma Shemitah Klaloseha Uvipratoseha Misinai. Just like Shemitah, we see the Torah spoke in general terms, right, and also in specific terms. So all the generalities and specifics of all the mitzvahs were given at Sinai. You have to understand what that means, generalities and specifics. Right? The specifics, the generalities are made up of all the specifics. So what's the idea of having a klal besides the prat? Right? It's enough to have all the pratim, and that makes up the klal. So we like to explain that there are two ideas in mitzvahs. And there's the mitzvah itself, and then there's the part of the mitzvah that reveals to us what the Rabbanu Shlom's will is for our entire lives, our standards, values, and so on. The Navi complains that Klal Yisrael keep the Torah, tzav l'tzav, kav l'kav, mitzvah here, a mitzvah there. And the question is, what's the problem? That's how you keep the Torah. You don't blow shofar, wave lulav, eat matzah, sit in a sukkah, and blow shofar all at once. One day of this mitzvah, one day a different mitzvah. So what's the problem that the Torah is kept piecemeal, mitzvah here, mitzvah there? The answer is that the Torah is not just a bunch of mitzvahs. It's not just a bunch of things to do. But it's a lifestyle. It's an entire way of life. It's standards, values, outlooks, attitudes. All of that is Torah, and that's called the Ratzon of the Rabbanu Shalom. What does God want from me in this world? Okay, He commands me to do certain things, but those things are supposed to mold my character, mold my attitudes, my standards, my values, or whatever. And that is the idea why by mitzvahs we find two different ways of obeying. One way is called Shmi'a Lishmo'a Likol Hashem, to listen to the Rabbanu Shel Olam. And the other way is to call Lishmo'a Bikol Hashem, to listen into what God said. Listening to Hashem is listening to the mitzvahs. I keep Shabbos, I eat kosher, whatever. Listening in is what it's supposed to teach me. What am I supposed to learn from that? Example, Shabbos. Shabbos is a mitzvah. It's a very narrow mitzvah. It comes once a week, has specific parameters. If you keep Shabbos and you do what you're supposed to do and not do what you're not supposed to do, so you're shomei likol Hashem, you listen to the Rabbanu Shel Olam. But Shabbos is supposed to engender within you an attitude. Right? That's the ratzon Hashem, the will of the Rabbanu Shel Olam. I always like to compare it to a gigantic light bulb. It's so big and so bright you can't look at it. That's the all-encompassing will of God for a person's entire life. It's too hard, almost impossible, to relate to that directly. So you take the light bulb and you put it into a globe, and you cut 613 windows in the globe. Through each little window you can see one small portion of the light bulb. There's only one light bulb. How do you know what the whole light bulb looks like? If you look through all 613 windows consecutively, you get a composite picture of the light bulb. That light bulb is called the will of God that encompasses your entire life. Everything. The mitzvahs are the windows to be able to see from different vantage points that will of the Rabbanu Shel Olam. So when you do the mitzvah, you open a window. You fulfill the mitzvah, you get rewarded for it, whatever. But there's more to it. Now look through that window and see what this mitzvah is supposed to tell you about your life in general, about what God's will is that's revealed through that mitzvah. As we said, Shabbos, right, is a mitzvah, but it also is supposed to engender the idea that this world is very important, and you work 6 days, but the purpose is to create Shabbos is for the sake of the world to come. So this world is a means to reach an end. It's not an end in itself. That's the lesson you're supposed to get from Shabbos. So a person who keeps Shabbos, but the whole week he has one goal in life, to earn another buck. So he's listened to Hashem, but he hasn't listened into what the Rabbanu Shalom said. The classic example which I love to give, which my mother-in-law told me I should mention as many times as I can, because she's hoping that I will listen to it sometime. The Reb Shlaga Feivel Mendelovich was the Menahel in Torah Vadas about 90 years ago. He was the founder of Torah Mesorah. So he told my day school principal the following story, and my day school principal, Rabbi Alexander Gross, told me the story. He was invited once to eat by a certain balabos who wanted the covet of this Rosh Hashiva eating at his home Friday night. So the men came home from shul, the man knocked on the door, opened the door, looked inside, turned white, was ready to faint. So Shlaga Feivel said, I knew that something was wrong on the other side of that door, and I was curious, so I peeked in, and right away I saw the problem. The house was a mess, the table wasn't set, and the housewife looked like she just came from Mars. He said, I right away figured out what happened. This poor woman was tired from preparing for Shabbos. So while the men were in shul, she said, you know what, I think I'm going to lie down for a few minutes. I'll get up in plenty of time to put the house in order and set the table before they come home from shul. And she fell into a deep sleep, and she didn't wake up until they knocked on the door. So the house was a mess. The table wasn't set, and she was hovering somewhere between this world and a different world. And Reb Shlaga Feivel said, I understood that this man was embarrassed to bring me in the house. But as things progressed, I realized that wasn't the problem. He understood that I would understand that this is not his fault. He wasn't sure. It's his wife's fault. You know what bothered him? On the table were the two challahs uncovered, without a challah cover. And this man was afraid that Reb Shlaga Feivel would think that he was a total ignoramus and didn't know you're supposed to cover the challahs. So to make it clear that that also was his wife's fault, he starts yelling at his wife. You are lazy, incompetent, you don't know you're supposed to cover the challahs? Now Reb Shlaga Feivel said, I know that he knows you're supposed to cover the challahs. Reb Shlaga Feivel said, at that moment I thought to myself, this is the most absurd thing I ever saw. Because one of the reasons we cover the challahs when we make Kiddush is because the bracha on bread and bread is more important than the bracha on wine and wine. And normally if you eat bread and wine, you first make a bracha on the bread, then you make a bracha on the wine. But Shabbos you can't do that. You have to make the bracha on wine first. So therefore, in order shall yira hapas boshto, in order that the bread should not be embarrassed and insulted, we cover it up. Now, I don't know, maybe my wife bakes insensitive challahs. But I never came home from shul, said something not nice to the challahs. They ran off the table, locked themselves in their room until I could appease them. It happened to my daughters a few times, but never with my challahs. Never. Personally, I never saw an embarrassed challah in my life. And if anybody here has seen one, I'm sure there's somebody professional that could help you. What does that mean? Right? An embarrassed challah. So the simplest idea behind the minig is that if you condition yourself not to embarrass an inanimate object, you'll never come to embarrass a human being. And here's a man, says Reb Shlaga Feivel, embarrassing and insulting his wife publicly to defend the honor of a piece of bread. Shmiya likol Hashem, the minig, 100%. What it means, what you're supposed to learn from it, zero. So that is what the Navi complains. We keep the Torah as a bunch of mitzvahs, a bunch of things to do, but we don't look beyond that to see what the Rabban Shem is telling us behind these mitzvahs, that we're supposed to mold our personalities, our character, our attitudes, our way of life. It's a whole picture. It's a whole package. It's not just a bunch of disjointed mitzvahs. That's what it means here. Kloloseihem uprotoseihem. Sometimes you miss the forest because of the trees. And sometimes you miss the trees because of the forest. The klal is, this is what God's will is for a person. The pratim, how do you get to that? By keeping the mitzvahs, the individual details. You can't only look at the philosophical generality, because then you'll never really understand what that ratzon Hashem is. You have to do the mitzvahs. So it's important to keep every individual mitzvah properly. But you can't lose sight that there's a bigger picture here than just doing a bunch of mitzvahs. There's a way of life, there's standards, there's values that those mitzvahs are supposed to generate. So that's what it means, kloloseihem uprotoseihem bismisinai. Okay, I have some other things here, but I want to go and skip to the next sedra, bichukosai. and tell you something that I may have said here before, but there's some new faces here, so somebody will hear it first time. And those who will hear it more than one time do not hear it as many times as I said it, and I heard it from me. So I heard it more times than you, so you can... And maybe you don't even remember, maybe I didn't say it, I don't remember where I said what. But it is, in my estimation, I was just in England. I said this once at a dinner there, around this time of year. And there are people, that must have been about 15 years ago that I said it. People came over to me and told me, I remember that what you said 15 years ago, this Lord. So it must have been worth hearing.
What you said, there goes my speech tonight.
No, I didn't. And I know that Rabbi Friend once quoted this in a shiur that he gave, Aseres Yemei, because I was together with him in Australia once, and I said it there. And I know that after that summer, somebody told me that he had quoted me, and fine, okay. So after that introduction, it better be okay. Right. It doesn't make a difference anymore. The Torah says in Bechukosai Teilechu Sheyiyu Ameilim BaTorah that you have to put effort into Torah. And if you put effort into Torah, then you're promised all of the good things that will be when Mashiach comes. When all of the Jewish people will be putting their effort into Torah, this is what the world will look like. If you don't put effort into Torah, so the opposite. You go down a slippery slope, seven levels, until you reach the bottom bargain basement of Kofar B'Ikar. Seven levels is, if you don't learn, you don't put effort in, you won't learn, you won't fulfill the mitzvahs properly, you'll be disgusted with people who keep the mitzvahs, you'll hate the chachamim, you'll prevent people from keeping mitzvahs, you'll deny the validity of the mitzvah, and finally you'll deny God. All from not putting effort into Torah. Now what does that mean, putting effort into Torah? So one idea is you take a man and he learns Torah 23 hours a day with his feet in ice water to make sure that he stays awake. That's effort in Torah. But that's not the effort that applies to everybody. So there's a worse, harder effort to put into Torah. And that is to constantly improve. Not to stay stationary, stagnant, and say, look, I reached a level of Yiddishkeit that I'm happy with, that I'm comfortable with, and that's it. I don't want to improve. I don't want to learn more. I don't want to do more. I kept Shabbos this way last week. I'll keep it the same way next week. You can't do that. Because this world is like a down escalator that you're trying to run up. If you stop, you go down. If you put some effort in, you stay stationary. If you put a lot of effort, you go a little bit higher. You can't, this is a world of motion. There's nothing in this world that is at rest. When things stop moving, they stop existing. So either you're moving ahead or you're moving backwards. You're progressing or you're regressing. You can't remain stagnant. And if you try to remain stagnant, you go down. And down all the way till the seventh level of Kofar B'Ikar. Now on the surface, that does not seem realistic. Because I know a lot of people who practice what I call status quo Judaism. In other words, this is the way I did it last week. This is my parents did it. Don't tell me anything more. I don't want to improve. I don't want to... And there's always reason to improve in everything. In your character, in mitzvahs, in Torah learning, whatever. I'm not interested. This is the way I did it before. I'm comfortable with this. I found a comfortable niche. That's where I want to stay. I know people, many people like that. And they're not Kofar B'Ikar. They're nice Shomer Shabbos people. What are you going to tell me? Give them another year. They'll be a Kofar B'Ikar. I know people who've been like that for three generations. So they're not Kofar. They're nice people. What are you going to tell me? Deep down, they don't believe in all this. I find that hard to believe. So what does it mean? So I'll tell you what I think it means. And it's so realistic that it's terrifying. Because it applies to all of us. Everybody. Without exception. And I'll tell you how I know that. Let's use the following story as a hakdama. When I was a rav in Miami, so when I first came to the kehillah, many of the people in the kehillah were retirees who grew up in America or came from Europe. They were Holocaust survivors or children of Holocaust survivors. And in America at the time when they were growing up, there was no real Jewish education. There was, you know, afternoon schools or whatever. And surely if they were Holocaust survivors, they didn't have a chance to have a real Jewish education. So they were, many of them, very frum people, Shomer Shabbos, but because in the home, that's what it was, but they never really learned anything. So they knew, you don't answer the phone on Shabbos, you don't drive on Shabbos, you don't light up fires, but they didn't know too much about the malachos of Shabbos, right, of the 39 malachos. They didn't know too much in depth of what Shabbos was really all about, halacha-wise. So I said, you know what, since most of these retirees come to Mincha and Maariv, and there's like a 15-minute slot between Mincha and Maariv, right, to give a shiur, I'm going to speak about the 39 malachos of Shabbos. Every day we'll learn a little bit more until we finish the 39 malachos, and this will give people a chance to learn something they never learned before. So that's what we did, and I remember we were up to the laws of Borer. Borer are very intricate laws, right, selecting, taking the good from the bad from the good, with a utensil, without a utensil, for immediate use, for later use. All of those are conditions that affect the halacha of Borer, selecting, separating on Shabbos. It's very, you'll excuse the pun, nitpicking laws. And a balabas, who didn't usually come to Mincha and Maariv, fell into the shir that day. He had yahrzeit for his mother at night, and he wanted to come to Maariv, and he miscalculated when Maariv would start. So he came early by mistake, and he fell into the shir. In the shul, at that time, as soon as you walked into the shul, you were in the shul. There was no, like, vestibule. So that's it. You were there. He was in the shir. He was too polite to walk out and come back for Maariv, so he sat down and listened. And we're going through all these intricate laws, and I see his eyes are bulging. So at the end of the shir, he comes over to me, and he says, "Rabbi, are there really people who do all of this?" Now, I was 6 months out of the kollel. I didn't think there were anybody who didn't do all of this. So we were a little bit both surprised. Let's use this person as an example. Here's a guy, Shomer Shabbos, fine person, but Borer, like, that's too much detail. I didn't do it last week. I didn't know about it. I don't want to know about it next week. Don't confuse my life with these details. Right? This is not the way my parents kept Shabbos. This is not the way I want to keep Shabbos, and that's it. Let's use this person. Okay, he wants to be comfortable, doesn't want to start changing and adding and improving, because that's all uncomfortable, to start changing your lifestyle. So he'll keep Shabbos the way he did last week. That's the way he's going to do it next week. And don't confuse me with this Borer thing. There's only one problem. People like to be comfortable, but they also don't like to feel guilty, because guilt is very uncomfortable. So how in the world can you, if you're an honest person and know that there is something to do with Borer, and maybe you should be careful how you conduct yourself in your kitchen and your dining room on Shabbos, and you don't want to do it because it's uncomfortable, because you don't want to change, on the other hand, you don't want to feel guilty about it. So the Satan created 7 defense mechanisms, which provide a person the ability not to improve and change, and not to feel guilty. And those are those 7 levels. Let me explain to them now in great detail. First, the first thing you have to do, right, you don't want to change, but you don't want to feel guilty about it, is don't learn.
Okay.
What does that mean? It doesn't mean don't learn anything. You can learn Kabbalah, you can learn Medrash, you can learn anything that doesn't smell from Hilchos Shabbos. Because the less you know about the laws of Shabbos, the more comfortable you can feel. Because then you don't feel guilty that you're doing something wrong, because you don't know what you're doing. You have no idea. So therefore, don't learn anything about it. Don't learn anything about it, right? Because I don't want to feel guilty. Ignorance is bliss. Not knowing, right? Don't want to know about it. So that's the first level down. First level down is don't learn. Don't learn anything that could give you more information about this thing you don't want to do than you have already. So you can lull yourself into thinking that it doesn't apply to you. So you say, well, what could Borer have to do? It probably has to do with farmers, with industry. What could I possibly do in my kitchen that would be Borer or whatever? So that's the end of that. You didn't learn. If you don't learn, you automatically go down to the next level. You don't do. You don't know what to do. And inevitably, like the Chofetz Chaim says, if you don't learn through Hilchos Shabbos, you're inevitably to be Mechal Shabbos. There's so many things that you can do inadvertently. So I go and I, what's it called? I'm that person. And I see one day, I love to eat fish on Shabbos with bones. But it's a big pain to take the bones out of the fish. So I see in a novelty shop a professional bone plucker that's hand operated. You put the fish into this thing, I don't think it exists, I made it up, and you pull down the lever and it eviscerates the fish from all the bones immediately. And all you're left with is the what's it called, the meat of the fish. I say, wow, this is great for Shabbos. So I buy it, I have it silver plated, and I have engraved the Kovet Shabbos Kodesh. And every Friday night, after we make a motzi, my wife brings this ceremoniously to the table. We put all the fish for the whole Shabbos into it, and I say the Kovet Shabbos Kodesh, and I pull down the lever, and all the bones are taken out. I have just transgressed a Torah prohibition, according to everybody. It's with a utensil, for not immediate use, the bad from the good. The worst you can get, that's Borer. But I don't know. I never learned it. So I think I'm doing something to cover Shabbos, and I just was Mechal Shabbos Min HaTorah, for which I'd be liable to a death penalty if there was Edim in Hasroah, whatever. Okay. Right. So I'm down already to the second level. Didn't learn, and I don't do. Now comes the third level. Now I'm very comfortable. Every Shabbos, I'm over the Issa D'Oraisa of Borer, don't know a word about it. And I feel very comfortable. I don't want to know about this Borer thing because it just upset my life. Next, somebody invites me, my friend invites me to eat Friday night by him. And he's a little bit more knowledgeable and a little bit more careful about the laws of Shabbos. So they serve fish, taco with bones. I say, Jude, I should have brought my bone plucker, you know. And I see my friend studying the fish, picking up his fork, looking at it, deciding, putting down the fork. Should he take the fish from the bones, the bones from the fish, with the fork, without the fork, right? And I begin to feel guilty. Because I know there's something to do with this Borer thing that he is considering, and I'm beginning to feel guilty that I don't know about this and I don't do it. So in order to not feel guilty, I have to go down to the third level. The third level is be disgusted with people who keep the mitzvahs. Meaning the following. Not all the mitzvahs, just the ones I don't want to do. I look at my friend and I say, this isn't normal. This guy's off the wall. People don't study their fish before they eat it. They eat it. This guy's a fanatic. This guy is kitzoni. This guy is black. You pick the word, right? This guy's a chnyok. You pick the language as a word that describes somebody who's doing what you don't want to do and makes him into a monster. He's a fanatic, right? He's a chnyok. And I don't want to be a fanatic. I don't want to be off the wall. It's not normal. Normal people don't do this. So I don't feel guilty. Because I just want to be normal. And this is not normal. This is fanaticism. So I don't feel guilty anymore because my neighbor's a fanatic. I go home, get a good night's sleep, wake up in the morning, make a bracha, shalom, sani chnyok, and I feel great. And I'm already down to the third level.
I didn't see that bracha.
Right? And they go down to the third level. I'm disgusted with people who keep the mitzvahs I don't want to keep because they make me feel guilty. Okay. Now I go to shul next day and I sit down there and the rabbi gets up to say, give his drasha. And he says, you know what? I've noticed that we have many, many fine Shomer Shabbos people in this shul who don't know the first thing about the halachas of Shabbos, like Borer. So, oh no. Now I'm a captive audience. I got to listen to this rabbi talk about Borer. I don't want to know from it. And if the more I know, the more guilty I'm going to feel. So I can't turn the rabbi off and say, well, he's a fanatic, he's off the wall, he's my rabbi. That won't work. So I have to go down now to the fourth level. The fourth level is Shonei HaChachamim. You begin to hate the Chachamim. What does that mean? I look at the rabbi and I say, it's not that I don't want to learn Torah. It's not that I don't want to hear what he has to say. But not that rabbi. Not that mouth. Right? That rabbi's not a mensch. 20 years ago, he passed my grandmother in the street. He didn't say good morning. That's a behemah. That's not a mensch. From that mouth, I wouldn't listen to the Gettysburg Address or the Aseret HaDibros. No way. So it's not that I don't want to hear what he has to say. It's just not from that mouth. And if he didn't have a grandmother, or the rabbi did say hello to her, so then you can find other things. That rabbi's in it for the money. Look at the car that he drives. Or that rabbi's a schlepper. Look at the car that he drives. You can always find something to impugn the person, even if you can't impugn what he's saying. And therefore, I don't have to listen to him. Not chas v'shalom that I want to hear Torah, but not from him. Not from that mouth. And if you don't think that can happen, tell you a true story. I got to make sure that I don't give any hints, because there are people here who couldn't figure out who I'm talking about. When I was the Rav in Miami, I was much younger than I am now. And I was younger than many of my balabatim who are already established professionals. And if I had something to tell somebody off, you know, to give him mussar, I felt intimidated many times. So there was one balabas there, and he, what's it called? So I usually incorporated it in my Shabbos drasha or whatever, you know, the mussar that I felt that people had to hear. In any case, there was one balabas there who was a professional, and he didn't like me in a big way. I mean, and usually rabbanim, you know, they know that some people like you, some people don't like you. Sometimes they're it's a legitimate reason why they don't like you. Sometimes not a legitimate reason, right? That's anybody who's osik b'tzorchei tzibur. So you have to deal with. Sometimes you treat people in the wrong way, and they have a right not to like you. And sometimes people don't like you for the wrong reason, whatever it is. This guy didn't like me in a real big way, but I didn't remember what I did to him that would have caused that. And it was really so bad that I started thinking to myself, maybe I murdered his mother and forgot about it. But then I realized he didn't like his mother anyway, so it didn't make too much of a difference. So, and I was really intimidated to confront him to find out what I did that he doesn't, what was the problem? Until 20 minutes before Ne'il on Yom Kippur. And I said to myself, you know what, maybe you really did something to this guy and you don't remember. And Yom Kippur is not going to be mechaper because you never asked him mechila. So I felt I didn't have any more chance. So I took him aside during the break we had before Ne'ila. And I said, look, I get the feeling that you don't like me in a big way. Okay. And I don't remember exactly what I did to deserve that. So if you'll remind me, I would be happy to apologize. And we can go into Ne'ila friends. He looks me straight in the eye. He says, Rabbi, I hate your guts. That's just what I had to hear 20 minutes before Ne'ila. Right? So I said, okay, you got it out of your system. Why? He said, because when you finish your drushes, I feel guilty. So I thought to myself, I guess I'm doing my job. I didn't say that to him. I said to him, look, that's not the intention. You know what? If that's what my drushes make you feel guilty, so why don't you, you know, before I speak, make it no obvious. Walk out, go to the bathroom, take a walk, you know, check on your children, whatever it is. You don't have to listen to it. If that's what it makes you feel guilty, walk out, whatever, and still make it obvious, and we can be friends. So we shook hands, and we were friends, till I think Erev Sukkot, and then something else happened, and that was the end of that. In any case, people who make you feel guilty, authority figures, you have to hate them, because otherwise, you're giving them credence. But if they're no good, then she can't make me feel guilty. So that's the next level down. Not everybody's like me. And my friends come over to me after shul, and they say, you know, the rabbi's right. We are Shomer Shabbos. We believe in the Torah. We don't really know too much about the halachas, and we really should learn. So we approach the rabbi, and we ask him to give us a shiur in the laws of Borer. So you want to join? Well, if that's the last thing in the world I want to do, is join the shiur in the laws of Borer. I don't want to know from this Borer thing. But go tell your friends that, you know, what's it called, that you don't want to join the shiur. You can't say that. So now you go down to level number 5. Level number 5 is Monea Acherim Milasos. You try to prevent people from keeping mitzvahs. Not all the mitzvahs, just the ones you don't want to do. Because if they keep them, you're going to feel guilty. So you tell your friends the following. You know, you want to be more firm? You want to start learning the laws of Borer? Be more careful, right? More exacting on Shabbos? Kol HaKavod. But let me warn you, it is a slippery slope, because it doesn't end with Boder. That's just the tip of the iceberg. You start being machmer, you start, you know, doing extra. I give you 2 weeks, you'll be taking a shower with a black hat on. Right? That's where it ends up. That's it. Yeah, you're going to become fanatics. Your wives will be wearing their tichel past their nose. It's going to be pikuach nefesh. They won't be able to breathe. Right? This is where you're heading. Right? You're heading towards fanaticism. Don't take that dangerous step. Starts with Borer, it never ends. Right? Just don't do that. You're going to going down a slippery slope. You know, some of them I can convince. And some of them are more honest, and they say, no, we're not going to become fanatics. We want to do what's right. So we want to learn more. We want to improve our Shemiras HaMitzvahs. So now I have to go down to the next level. Level number six. Level number six is kofer b'mitzvos. I deny the validity of the mitzvah. That sounds very harsh, but it's not really harsh. What it means is the following. I say to my friends, do you think if Borer was a halacha, I wouldn't be the first one to join the shir? Of course I would. But let me tell you, Borer is only a chumrah. And in our family, we weren't machmer like that. We didn't have that chumrah. Or Borer is only a minig. And we didn't have that minig in our family. Or Borer is only one opinion. I don't know who the other opinion is, but there's always another opinion, and I'm for the guy with the other opinion. So you've reduced the mitzvah to a chumrah, to one shita, or to a minig. If you don't think that's possible, right? That minhagim, that could be a minig. Well, we didn't have a minig of Borer in our family. I once had a balabas that I saw drive to my shul in Miami, park a block away, and walk the last block. So during the week, when I had him alone privately, I said, you probably think there's a mitzvah to walk on Shabbos. So you parked your car a block away, and with Mekayim, the mitzvah of walking on Shabbos, that last block. But you should know there's an Isser to drive on Shabbos. You're not allowed to drive on Shabbos, so parking a block away doesn't help. He said, you don't understand, Rabbi. My father parked there, my grandfather parked there. It's a minig in our family. That's how we park on Shabbos. Mm-hmm. Okay, so go fight with Minhagim. So that's the next step down. I deny the fact that it is a mitzvah. It's only a chumrah. It's only a minig. It's only one opinion. There are other opinions, and we don't hold from that opinion. We don't have that minig. We don't have that chumrah, and therefore Borer is irrelevant to me. That's good, until somebody brings me a Mishnah Berurah, mm-hmm. a Kafa Chaim, right? Rabbi Eider in English, you know, everybody says that it's not Ashkenazim, Sfardim, Temanim, everybody holds that using a professional bone plucker to take the bones out of your fish is an Issa D'oraisa. It's not a minig, it's not a chumrah, it's not one opinion, it is universal. Now I'm stuck. Now I have to go down to level number seven. Level number seven is called kofer b'ikar. Now that sounds really harsh. It sounds like you're an atheist. I deny God. That's not what it means. What it means is the following. I say to my friends, okay, you got me. So I don't do Borer. But I can't do everything. I have a life. You know, I let God interfere on my life up to a point, but this is like too much. This is too much, uncomfortable. This is not something I can do. So basically, what am I saying? I don't believe the mitzvah is an ikr. It's not an ikr in my life. Right? And if the mitzvah is not an ikr, then the mitzvah, the one who commanded the mitzvah, is not an ikr. God plays a part in my life, up to a point. I let him interfere up to a point. There's a point where it's too difficult, right? too uncomfortable, and there, God, keep out of my life. I have more important things in my life to worry about than Borer. So if Borer is not an ikr, then the one who gave the mitzvah Borer is not an ikr too. I'm kofer b'ikr. I deny that God is the ikr of my life, and I have other things more important. That's what it means. And it applies to every single one of us. You can be a 99% Shomer Torah mitzvahs, Haredi Jew, the highest level you can think of. In that one area that rubs you the wrong way, where you don't want to improve. And for everybody, it's something different. For some people, it's Shabbos. For some people, it's Kashrus. This is the way we did it last. This is what we ate last year. This is what we're eating this year. Right? And whether, you know, so it doesn't have such a good hechsher. As long as there's a K somewhere in the name of the product, that's good enough for me. Right? Right. That's the way we did it. That's the way I don't want to know for these things. I don't want to know why I need a better hechsher, lesser hechsher, whatever. I just don't want to improve. Some, for some people, it's sneeze. This is the way I dressed yesterday. This is the way I dress tomorrow. And don't tell me. I don't want to know. And some people, it's business ethics. I cheated people last week. I'm going to cheat them next week. And don't bother me with the details of all these laws. I don't want to know. I don't want to improve. Right? I cheat people because you cheat goyim, which is not true. Can cheat goyim, and real religious Jews are just like goyim, and most religious Jews are a bunch of fakers, so they're also like goyim. So everybody's okay to cheat, and I convince myself it's okay. And I want to know. You have to be on one of these levels because we're human beings, and we don't want to feel guilty. And you have to have one of these defense mechanisms in order not to feel guilty. How do I know it applies to everybody? I once gave this shiur in Hebrew to a group of Beis Yaakov principals and teachers, mostly principals, okay, menahalot, of Hasidish, Litvish, Beis Yaakovs, and Beit HaMorim. And I thought to myself, these women aren't going to know what I'm talking about, right? They're not familiar with this attitude or with this phenomenon. But you know what? I said to them, look, I said, I don't know if you're going to be able to relate to what I'm telling you, but you should know that it exists in the world. There is such a phenomenon. The end of the shiur, an elderly Beis Yaakov Minahelet, Chassidisha, comes over to me and she says, you were talking to me. I said, now I'm sure you didn't know what I was talking about. You think I was talking to you. She said, no, I'll tell you, you made me understand something I didn't understand. She said, we, most Chassidim, do not allow their wives to wear wigs, sheplech, just hair coverings, no wig. And if they wear a wig, they have to wear a hat on top of the wig. That's a more normal Hasidish headgear. So this woman said, but our Rebbe holds that we can wear a wig without a hat on top. That's, and we do. We wear wigs without hats on top. So my daughter got married about a year ago. And we see during Sheva Brachas, she's not putting on a wig. Just a head covering. So I thought maybe she's too busy and she can't have the time to put on the wig, so that's why she's, what's it called, just wearing a head covering. After Sheva Brachas, I see she's not putting on a wig, she's only having, covering her head with a head covering. So after, you know, about a month, maybe a few Shabbosos, I go over to her and I say, what's going on? Why aren't you wearing a wig? She said, well, we wanted to be machmer and not wear a wig, only wear a head covering. I started thinking to myself, what kind of fanatic is this? What, you know, why does she want to be machmer for? And it bothered me. Why did I think that? Why wasn't I proud of her that she wants to be extra careful? And now I realize it. Because I felt guilty. That if tomorrow the Rebbe would say, from now on you have to cover up the wig, I wouldn't feel comfortable doing that. And because I wouldn't feel comfortable doing it, right, I had to lash out at her because she made me feel guilty. That doesn't mean you have to do every chumrah that exists. But it means that you have to respect the fact that if it wouldn't be a chumrah and you would have to do it, you would do it. So that's not, what's it called? There's a chumrah that women, what's it called, certain Hasidic women shave their head by the wedding. Somebody told me that they were at a wedding, it's a part of the ceremony. After the badekin, they put a mechitz around the kala and they shave her head, bald. Okay. I am not looking forward to my wife doing that. And if she did, she probably would have to find a different husband. Maybe not, but okay. The definitely would not engender great shalom bias. However, somebody who has that minute, I can respect. I mean, I feel I don't have to do it, right? But lemaisa, but if I knew that if tomorrow all the Rosh Yeshiva would come out and say we've made a big mistake, we think every woman should shave her head, I would resist doing it. Then people who do it make me feel guilty. Because I know deep down I wouldn't do it even if I had to. So that's what she said. So it applies even to people of that caliber, but it depends. Whatever you know that you would resist improving if you had to, then you feel guilty about doing that, and you have to be on one of these seven levels. It's impossible not to be. And that does not, what's the litmus test, I think? Look at somebody who's doing something that you claim you'd like to do. Look, none of us are tzaddikim gemurim, at least speak for myself. So we have room to improve. Everybody has room to improve, constantly. How do I know if I'm on the level of, if I'm on the road to improvement, or I'm fooling myself. Right? I would like to be the Chofetz Chaim and not speak Lashon Hara. I'm not holding by that. How do I know if I'm really on the road and I want to do that and I'm working on it and just, right, or that I'm really not interested? Look at somebody who does do it, who's very careful what they say. Okay, how do you feel about them? If you resent them and consider them fanatics, then you know you're not on the path and you don't want to do that, and therefore you feel guilty. And that's why you have to lash out at them. If you're really on the path, then you'll admire them. I wish I could be like that. I can't. For whatever reason, right now, I'm not holding by that. But I admire somebody who could do it. So that is the litmus test, I think, to know if you're on the path or you're not interested in improving b'chlal, you're just fooling yourself. So that is the seven levels that the Torah says. If you are interested in improving, which is amelus b'Torah, that's the real effort you have to put into Torah. It's very difficult to improve. It's very comfortable to find your niche and say, this is where I was, this is where I want to be, I don't want to improve, I don't want to learn anymore, I don't want to put any effort into improving my Yiddishkeit, I just want to stay status quo. But if you do that, inevitably you're going to have to fall down these seven levels, because we're human beings who don't like to feel guilty, and these are the defense mechanisms against guilt. So in Yirtzeh Hashem, if we understand that, and each person on his level in the things that we need improvement, we will slowly but surely improve, so we don't have to fall down this down escalator and end up in the bargain basement.